But yeah, to transition into what you just mentioned, movies with much less subtlety, Triangle of Sadness, and I think I kind of want to pair this with The Menu.
Nice little pairing. No pun intended.
Well, yeah, a little food pairing. I love a wonderful Eat the Rich, which is, you know, very hot right now. We already mentioned White Lotus. Rich people being douchey, I think, is kind of definitely a thing right now. And you know, burning them up, literally, in some cases. Just making fun of rich people and that whole subset, you know, nepotism and model culture, mm-hmm. and yacht culture, just people with excess. I think both movies deal a lot with excess and punishing those people who have enjoyed it for too long. But yeah, let's start with Triangle of Sadness. I mean, I didn't really tell you much going in other than the pitch that Woody Harrelson kills it, and it's a pretty funny movie. But what was your reaction?
Yeah, so to go back real quick, because we're on the topic, there does seem to be a comment the last, I would say, 10 years. It's definitely a theme in movies that we continue to see, movies and television. So I think, you know, capitalism, wealth, and excess, the priority of that as a culture and where it's leading us morally is a very interesting conversation we see play out. Like, I would say, you know, Parasite is another movie that is in the same space. Glass Onion, Big Short, Wolf of Wall Street, Don't Look Up. You talked about White Lotus. Like, a lot of these are some of the best things that came out those years.
Yeah.
And they are all on they're not all the exact comment, but, you know, similar comments. And then you've got The Menu, you know, things like that. But I think it's interesting that this is a topic of conversation. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun subgenre to explore. I think it creates a devilishly good time for us plebs to see this billionaire Russian guy who made his money selling bird shit eat his own shit. It's a fun time. I think I mentioned this recently to somebody. I would rather watch the first half of Menu and the back half of Triangle, mm-hmm. Not to overly compare them, but The Menu, I mean, anyone that's worked in front of house or hospitality, it's just so fun right off the bat. And yeah, anyone that's watched any Chef's Table episodes or have gone to restaurants on Chef's Table, like I have, you see yourself in the one character, but also you're able to kind of hate the other characters because you've served them. There's a lot of crossover. I felt very seen, as well as really relating to what they were talking about. But it's a lot of fun right off the bat. Triangle, you know, you got the, oh, Balenciaga, oh, we're sad, oh, well, our brand is very expensive. Oh, no, we're all happy. We're selling cheap H&M. Oh, Balenciaga. Like, that was a... And then you get into, like, the awkwardness with the tipping, which is so cringeworthy to anyone that's had to split a bill, especially when someone eats more of the nachos and you don't get any, like, fully mm-hmm. loaded nachos. But then the yacht scene is where it really takes off, and I think that's what won at Cannes, so it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
It's like the dress scene and Bridesmaids, where it's coming out of them like lava, meets the Titanic sinking. I had a friend that on social media that had said that, and I was like, that's a perfect way to, it's like, because the ship is just extreme rocking back and forth. You've seen people tumbling all over the place, but also
still trying to photograph their foam and their emulsions. And
but because they were all forced to, because the chefs in the kitchen we're all forced to go water sliding, like the food is all spoiled and they're just like eating rotten food and throwing
not to mention like the seasickness like Woody Harrelson, when they come in to meet the captain and him and his first mate are standing at like a 45 degree angle.
So funny. And then the chick's puking but trying to drink champagne to like get the to go down. It's like, what, why would you think champagne?
Like, no, not anything without bubbles. actively throwing up and like, no, I still want to drink my Paul Roger Winston Cuvée because it's status. They're just like literally clinging on to like a status symbol while completely losing their dignity, which I would argue is how most people spend their money. Most people with wealth have like no class in my experience. There, it's just excess and they don't even know what they're drinking or they don't appreciate any. They're just there for... And again, there's like that in the menu. People, like, they don't even know what they're eating. They're just there because it's expensive, and to get a ticket is means you, that you've made it. And then when the course comes out and it's like, here's a bunch of dipping sauces, you don't get any bread. Like, the fuck is this? And then one guy's like, oh, it's incredible. Oh, my God, I love the narratives and the theatrics.
Yeah, Tyler. So I think so let's do a... So with Triangle of Sadness, though, I think when it gets to the island, like the pirates raid the boat, they, you know, a small group of people wash ashore this island, and it gets to that Lord of the Flies, and, you know, obviously...
Lord of the Flies, yeah.
The power dynamic shifts where you've got the woman who used to clean toilets is the only one that knows how to make a fire. She's the only one that knows how to fish, and so she's able to build a sex slave out of the model, as well as have complete demand of the society. And then at the end, obviously, there's this, what's she going to do with that rock, you know? And
I also love real quick that he's the sex slave, but his girlfriend is kind of okay with it because he brings her pretzel sticks. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I got to keep going along with this. I can't give up the pretzel sticks.
Well, because a lot of society, you know, it's the man with the power, and then he's building, you know, he has a female sex slave, you know, and you kind of have to, in order to have the quality of life or the essentials that you deem are important, you kind of have to, you know, go along with this type of relationship, and there's this like false sense of love and companionship that gets built, and obviously that's inverted in this particular circumstance.
Well, and then in the beginning, like, he says he wants to invert the power dynamic. He's like, it's not about money, y'all. Like, I don't want to be the prototypical man. We should be friends. And then, and now it's like, all right, man. Well, yeah, you got it. So yeah, you what's her name? The cleaning lady becomes the Lord of the Flies. But yeah, no, so back to the end, because I think that's I was like, what happened? And then you look it up, and the director's like, I don't even know. Let the audience decide for themselves.
I always love those moral questions that a filmmaker will propose to you, because you really find out if you're half empty or half full, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, she does this woman, is she willing to murder, even if it's for, you know, obviously eventually that the society is going to find out about this and change the dynamic of their life and go back to their regular lives. But is she so desperate for that power that she's willing to murder someone to hold on to it for even a little bit longer? Or, you know, does she want to take her up on the offer? I think just based on the look in her eyes, based on the major turn, she would rather murder and try to wait that out for as long as possible, versus becoming someone's assistant and going back to a life of servitude. I don't think there was any sort of part of her that would want to give up that status.
Totally. You can see it in her eye. I feel like the actress had to make the decision, and if you can kind of play a little detective, you can kind of see, and Dolly De Leon, Abigail is the character I was trying to think of. I think she makes the decision to drop the rock because wants to. Yeah, I think the actress has made that decision, and based on what I see behind the eyes, here's what I think happened. So obviously, if you haven't seen the movie, check it out. But this Lord of the Flies, they're shipwrecked on this island, and we come to learn that this island they've been starving on and subsisting on pretzel sticks for months, who knows, was actually just like the other side of the island of like a White Lotus resort. So like this a lot of cross play there, but So this resort exists on the island. They just weren't able to explore far enough to find it. They discover this resort. Yaya is immediately, you know, inner element. Okay, we'll be saved. Let me, like, sunbathe here for a minute. And mm-hmm. you can be my assistant when we get back to the real world. I can help you. And this woman's like, hold on a second. I was, like, your queen for a minute here. Mm-hmm. Why don't I murder you? Go back to... Because then the last shot is the guy running through the woods in a frantic rush.
Yeah, because they've discovered the guy selling hats. Because there was the guy that came across them, and I think the group has discovered that. So he's like, "Oh my god!" I think he even knows. Once they figure this out, she's probably going to want to murder Yaya. I need to go.
Oh, that's rescue interesting. The situation. See, because you could interpret it a few ways. Where the murder happens, Abigail returns to the group solo, and she's like, "Hey, Yaya fell off a cliff. She's dead." He's running to her body, but. I like what you're saying, how the guy with the hats who's walking around finds the deaf woman who can't kind of communicate with him. Mm-hmm. And kind of is like, and he's like, screw you, lady, I'm out of here. Because she just keeps saying that one phrase. But then you're saying that the hat guy is trying to, he finds the other group, and then he's running to save Yaya. So yeah, mm-hmm. that, I guess... I think a lot of that can all be
true. He's running to kill that experience as soon as possible. Like, hey, we're done. Like, we can, you know, I found a place for us to get back. I think he's trying to, you know, end the nightmare.
He's either running to give the good news or he's frantically running, which he is, to avert some disaster that he has perceived will inevitably happen. So, yeah.
Exactly.
It's a cool thing to interpret, and I do like the idea that the director's come out to say, you know what, I didn't make that call, so we left it as it was, and you kind of find that a lot in the editing bay as
it's
well.
It's Tony Soprano in The Fade to Black, you know, where are you at? I think he lives, it's like, I think there's a lot more information with Tony Soprano, I'm just saying it's a similar type situation.
I love that, like, this is something Woody Harrelson would have signed up for as well, like...
Great.
He's such a big star in this otherwise, you know, unknown, you know, Ruben Östlund, the director, who has twice won the Cannes Palme d'Or, but obviously has a big name. He's like, I want to work with that guy. Yeah. And it's because he does stand out. He's just like this A-list celebrity.
Yeah,
and he's the captain. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. But then he's like... I guess maybe even the character is just, I barely want to be here. I'm just going to get wasted. I'm so above this bullshit. Not to say that the movie, but whatever. So I just love that he is what he's like a communist or a capitalist or so there's a capitalist Russian and the communist American.
But when they're having that conversation over the PA system, they're like wasted and you could just completely throwing a, the experience to abandon. I think it's haunting, like the sound. Yeah. Especially like the guy, the Russian kind of sounds like Andre the Giant, and he's talking,
yeah, totally.
Like talking on top of the microphone, but it's like very spooky as you're watching all of this absurdity happen. You're kind of like frightened but like laughing because or grossed out at least. It was a cosmic gumbo of emotions.
Hey,
that's a I think you should leave line, but I digress. So real quick, the menu, we won't get into as deep as Triangle of Sadness, but I did want to say, you know, when I was watching the menu, Ralph Fiennes, I was like, this guy has to be on the Mount Rushmore of psychos. Like he's
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon, he's the German like psycho Nazi in Schindler's List. You've got this movie. You've got Voldemort. Like, excuse me, he must not be named. But you know, he really is. And I was like, who else would I put on my Mount Rushmore of psychos? So
meanwhile, he's playing Gustav H in Grand Budapest. I mean, who has bigger range than Ralph Fiennes?
Like a
Shakespearean actor. Yeah, Gustav H into the Red Dragon psycho. I mean, he can be so funny and so chilling at the same time. And I think what I love about the menu is he gets to do both a little bit.
Yeah, this character is a marriage between Gustav H and the Red Dragon psycho guy, right?
Who is Gustav H? I'm afraid that's me, darling.
But, okay, so...
I gotta rewatch that.
Mount Rushmore of psychos. I have Anthony Hopkins. I think he is plays a lot of different psychos.
I want a room with a view.
Ben Foster, of course. Ben Foster.
Oh,
is,
Ben Foster, yeah. He's
he's got to be on the Mount Rushmore of psychos.
Lord of the Manor. Yeah, he's got to be
up there. He's in the Analysis Hall of Fame. Ben Foster. Just go watch any movie he's in. He's probably playing some sort of psychopath. The fourth head on the Mount Rushmore, I'm not too sure. I was like thinking like Pesci or De Niro. I haven't been hit with like this like...
Maybe Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman does play a decent amount of psychos.
John Malkovich?
John Malkovich! Okay, we'll put John Malkovich on there for now. He's always a psycho. yeah, but anyway.
Malkovich, Malkovich!
So I was just thinking, I was like, God, Ray Fiennes is always a fucking lunatic. And then I loved in the menu the placards that would come up and got progressively more and more bizarre of what the dish was. So it would be like a picture of the dish. And Tyler's bullshit is undercooked lamb, inedible shallot leek butter sauce, utter lack of cohesion.
That scene was so funny.
He patronizingly writes Tyler on the menu jacket or the jacket of the
undercooked lamb in like a shallot butter.
Utter lack of greatness. It just looks terrible, ineditable.
I also enjoy the bonus bite to the last surviving member of that the hunt for the men, and he just terrifyingly receives it, and then this like little egg dish.
Little eggs. There were so many little moments like that.
Yeah,
or just the how absurd they looked with their marshmallow suits on and their hats at the end. But it was I really enjoyed that. That was really fun.
It was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I don't know if they stuck the landing. I mean, the marshmallows was great. We kind of get lost in the plot a little bit with her trying to find a way out, and then the Coast Guard.
I think she should have just been able to figure out the whole... The guy coming in and pretending to be the sea captain, that is a little unnecessary. But it's definitely a fart sniffer movie. Definitely a movie totally. For fart sniffers. People who fart in a wine glass and then smell it themselves. Like, the people that they're making fun of are probably a lot of the target audience of people who would have gone and seen it in the first place, which is fun.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Well, me included. But also, like, that You're Not Yelping South Park episode in general. Yeah. Why am I trying to appease these people?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that pepper that feels tingly in my tongue? Oh, that's just a yuzu pepper along with some boogers and cum.
Yeah.
And then... those are the characters that South Park sends up, right? Where they take a champagne glass, they fart in it, and they're swirling and sniffing it. And that's, 100%.
Also, Anna Taylor-Joy. Mm-hmm. Always playing a hooker.
Is she good?
She's always playing a hooker. It's the second movie. Wasn't she a hooker in that Soho movie?
Yep. One Night in Soho. She's kind of a hooker in Emma as well. That's Pride and Prejudice esque movie, and then a chess playing hooker? No, I'm just kidding.
She wasn't hooking in that one. She was very, but she great actress, interesting look, but apparently casting directors are like hooker. Looks like a hooker.
One Night in Soho is great as well. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's definitely give it a stream if you're looking
give
for
it a
something.
Stream.
Cool. Yeah, I think we caught up on a few loose ends here.
I would say I recommend Triangles of Sadness. If you're in for the purge, I would say After Sun, one of the best written and performed movie this year. I really enjoyed The Menu. That's just a fun one to watch on a kind of a casual Wednesday night, looking to do a little something after dinner. I think that's a great movie to throw on there. So then,
I don't usually recommend this category, but a great plane watch too. I mean, the menu if you're stuck on an airplane, because I feel like it's really hard to pick a movie that's going to be good on a plane, especially if you haven't seen it yet. Where I would encourage people to maybe rewatch as opposed to check something out new. But yeah, I think The Menu, something kind of fun and devilish, probably striking a lot of notes on people that travel, especially if they travel for food.
Yes.
But cool, yeah, I think that. And then also After Sun, I just saw Sight and Sound poll has this at number one movie of the year.
There you go.
Sight and Sound is a collection of 90 critics. Last year, what they had, the Souvenir Part 2, Drive My Car up there. But so this is like the poll I was telling you about, how every 10 years they come together, they poll the all these critics and stuff. And for the longest time, it's been Citizen Kane number one. You know, mm-hmm. at one point they had Vertigo in there as well. But this is like the magazine that dubs greatest movie of all time. And so their year-end list has After Sun number one, St. Omer number two, Decision to Leave, Banshees of Inisherin at four, Nope at five, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. EO is Maverick? A movie I want to check out. Maverick is down here at, it's on the list, comes in at 38 of 50. So,
and you still find this publication credible? Okay.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. They also have Elvis at 17. So you gotta take that.
I think we're throwing this entire list in the trash, according to Matt.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. That's a black mark on the what I was trying to build up as a prestige. Taste making.
Never mind. This is totally.
Never mind. Just forget everything I just said.
This is libel.
Just gotta edit that up. I'm still pulling for Maverick to win Best Picture, Best Movie of the Year. It saved the fucking Oscars, as
Spielberg
said. Saved the theatrical experience. Fucking made everyone eat their ass and get back to the theater. Anyway, that's my pick. I doubt it wins, but you sent me a little promo what Jimmy Kimmel's doing. I like where that's going. I like the parody stuff. I like the Billy Crystal. Let's take all the movies nominated and parody them in some way. Stewart was good at that. All good hosts have done this.
You got to do the parody. Yeah.
You got to include all the movies and parody it somehow. The reader. I haven't seen the reader. Just more of that. I love that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's celebrate the movies and make it funny. All right. Well, we'll cut it there and let's go see some stuff and come back and chat some other movies.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to next chat. I'd like to get Babylon and the Whale.
Oh, God. Yeah. Babylon the Whale. Yeah, let's do that next. I had a profound experience watching Babylon. And I want to share.
Me as well. Also, though. I'd like to chat with you on some of that. But cool. With that said, we'll do everybody, don't forget to wash your hands. Stay safe. We'll see you down the road.
See you down the road.
Bye.
Bye. But I'm thinking it's time to go. Here we go. So put your best face on, everybody. Pretend you know this song. Everybody come hang. Let's go out.